Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with writers in the studios of North State Public Radio. Now here's your host, Nancy Wiegman.
Not having children is becoming more common in many countries worldwide, but being childless is a subject not much talked about. Instead, the focus seems to be on having families and raising children in rural and towns or city life. Lisette Schurtemacher writes about these patterns in our lives that are seldom addressed. Her book on the eldest daughter effect was the subject of a 2016 TEDx talk. She is a Dutch author who studied classics at the University of Leiden in the Netherlands. She later came to the United States and studied Brennan healing science. She happily has no children, and her artist partner does not want children. Lisette's fourth book is about living childless, the joys and challenges of life without children. Lisette Schurtemacher, welcome.
Thank you. Lovely to be here. Yeah.
Well, that last name, I mentioned that you are Dutch. You, of course, speak English.
Yes.
And you write in both Dutch and English. And so your book, Childless Living, is written in English. And I've been surprised how many people, just as I mentioned that I'm reading your book, say, oh, I want to read that.
Oh, good.
Now, that's typically the women's reaction. And I've been just kind of making my own informal survey. And a gentleman said, well, that book's not necessary. That's outdated. We've gotten past that. And I said, no, you need to talk to some women about that. So how did you go about, what got you interested in this subject?
You know, several things. I feel life sometimes nudges me towards a next topic for a book. And at the launch of the Eldest Daughter Effect, the English version in London, we had a conversation about not having children because we were the eldest and there were a few of us. And that conversation was lovely and intimate. And afterwards, the women of my workshop came to me and said, I haven't talked about this topic for a very long time. Now, after you get past a certain age, so to say, you know, when you're in your 20s and 30s, it's all very up. But then it kind of fades out, although the topic journeys with you throughout your life. And then there was a question asked on a Facebook group. A woman end 30s was kind of hesitant. She thought she didn't want children, but maybe she should. And could other people share their experiences? And I answered quite lengthily. And then I thought, oh, I have something to say on this topic. And I'd love to spend some time with this subject and see how other people negotiate their lives, what their choices were, whether they are really child-free in the sense that, you know, never having wanted a child, or whether they are childless and they've tried, or whether they're somewhere in between. And how does this work in all the seasons of our life?
In fact, that's how you have your book arranged, in the seasons of our life. And
yeah.
Obviously spring is when you're young. And you say about yourself, you said, I'm grateful every day that I do not have children. I feel deep appreciation for having had the stubbornness and courage to follow my own path. And I couldn't feel more grateful to the experiences I've allowed myself to gather. Of course, if I had been a mother, I would have gained other experiences, and had parenthood been a part of my life, that would have been perfect. As it is, I feel completely happy and not missing out on anything. On the contrary, I feel rich as can be in my childless, and now also grandchildless existence. Those are mouthful.
Yeah.
In fact, one childless friend of mine who knew from as young as she was, could remember that she did not want to have children. It didn't mean she didn't like children. She was a teacher, and she was quite fond of children, but she knew at an early age she did not want to have children. Now, her reaction when I mentioned the name of your book, Childless Living, she said, well, that sounds negative. Do you get that reaction, too, that people say, hey, wait a minute, I'm childless, but...
Well, mm-hmm. Yeah, I've tried. I've done a couple of ways. I've tried to find a word that didn't include a negative. Like mm-hmm. childless mm-hmm. sounds as if, you know, there's something not there that ought to have been there.
Yeah, that was her reaction.
Child-free, it's a bit the same. And I could not come up. And I tried, I studied the classics, as you said. So I looked in ancient Greek and Latin, and I had people, you know, I did a Facebook thing, and it had so many responses, but nobody came up with a good word. So, yeah, I hope it doesn't sound negative. For me, childless living is really a positive thing, as you just read. You know, as the eldest daughter of I was born in the 50s, the mid 50s, and my mother was a typical housewife and wife of one and mother of four, and she loved it, and she completely assumed that I would have that life too. And expected me to marry the man and give her the grandchildren. And so she was dismayed when I kind of made one choice after another that didn't lead to that kind of life.
Well, let me remind people, the full title of your book, Childless Living, The Joys and Challenges of Life Without Children. And you mentioned your mother, because she was a traditional mother and the family was so important to her, that she assumed that you would feel the same way?
Absolutely. She could not. And she's 91 in a few weeks' time. And still she says, I do not understand your life. I do not understand what makes you happy, because you, my children, are the joy of my life still to this day. So we have, I mean, it's now the tension has gone out of that conversation. But when I was in my 20s and 30s, I felt the pressure and there was tension because I thought it's not my life. I looked at that model and you know, didn't feel any joy towards that.
Well, speaking of the fact that your mother is in her 90s, you interviewed people who didn't have children aged 19 to 91 in all countries. And so what were the people who responded to your questions, your interviews and surveys?
Yeah, so my survey was responded to by over 700 people from 30 countries. And when I went to see the person, the data researcher who helped me set up that survey, she opened her front door and she said, Lisette, you have reached a bizarrely happy cohort. It's like, oh, that's interesting. And so her conclusion was, you must be bizarrely happy yourself, because it will be a reflection of me. And, you know, I said, well, that's absolutely true. But people were so happy, or are so happy, because they feel they can make a true contribution to society, to the world, to wherever they live, in the way that is theirs. So, and the people I interviewed it was varied. That's why at some point I was quite desperate. Now the book looks so tidy. It's all in the four seasons of our life and neat, 45 chapters. But at some point I spoke to, you know, people who would have wanted a child, really would have loved to have it, and it wasn't given, and they went through deep, deep despair until they kind of, you know, accepted what was instead of what they wanted to be. To people who never in their life even wanted a partner. I spoke to a former nun. I spoke to young people who are still deciding, and, you know, one sit, the other one doesn't. How do you negotiate that in your relationship? What takes precedence then? So I had a wide array of material. We come in many guises.
My guest is Lisette Schutemacher. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah.
You have a section in your book called Bizarrely Happy. Use that word bizarrely happy, because to people like your mother, it is bizarre. But
not only to people, it's also my data researcher has all these medians, you know, so this is the average. And it was so beyond the average that she said, she called it bizarrely happy. Mm-hmm. And I quoted her on that.
Yeah. She said, you have reached a bizarrely happy segment of the world population. And she made us a big pot of tea. She said they are extraordinarily pleased with their lives, their own development, and the contribution they feel they make to society. And it was interesting, the people who responded, not all answered the question about gender, but the ones who did, you said 55 were men, 444 women, five different. So it was, there were many more women who indicated their gender. And I think perhaps my very limited survey was maybe representative in that women are so much more interested in this topic than, say, men realize. And they seem so eager to talk about it. This morning, I had a chance to, I was talking to this 28-year-old Chicana, and I said, do you mind if I ask you a rather personal question? And she said, no. I said, do you have children? And that opened a floodgate. She talked and talked. She was so interested in the subject. And I guess, I'm sure she's talked about it with other people. And then the irony was, she said, oh, I've got to go to class. And it was a class in child development.
Yeah.
Just 28-year-old.
But it is sweet, mm-hmm. isn't it? How talking about this opens us up to one another.
Yes.
And I can really affirm that women are much more engaged with this topic than men. Men, sometimes there's an example in my book of a couple where the man, you know, they'd taken the decision and for him it was a done deal. He never gave it another thought. And his wife, you know, on a daily basis kind of tested, is this still okay for me? Is this still what I want? And also women get the question much more often, why don't you have children? Oh, it's not being asked of men. So we're also maybe, you know, more engaged in the topic, but also society confronts us with it, to use that word.
Well, when I lived in South America, I would meet, and these were strangers. These weren't friends that I would have struck up a conversation with. And they would first ask, was I married? And the next question, do you have children? And the next question was often, why not?
Yeah.
They couldn't, it was a Catholic country, for one thing, but, and they really didn't know how to engage me. They were quite friendly, but they didn't know what to talk to me about if I didn't have children.
Yes, so I've also spoken to professional women who do business in countries where not having children is bizarre, so to say. Yeah. And some of them have whole made-up families because they would be regarded as so weird and not trustworthy because they're not married or they have no children. So they kind of, some of them said, I just lend, you know, children of a friend of mine that I'm really close to, those children. So I know their ages and their names and I'm kind of consistent in my story because they really exist. They're just not mine, really. Yeah.
Well, maybe we should make the point that when you were writing this book, you did not intend to speak out against having children. That's not the purpose of your book. So what did you want to show with your book?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. I'm not for or against children, and I really like children, but I'm for us leading the life that is ours to live and not needing to be boxed into a box that doesn't really fit us. So that was the purpose of my book, to kind of address this topic that is not often addressed and to show how many angles it has and to also show how many of us there are. There are between 15% and 20% of people have no children. So we think we're a minority. We are a minority, but it's a big minority. There's a lot of us. It's like one in five people you meet on the street does not have children. So there's nothing to kind of hide or be ashamed about or kind of think we're weird. We're very normal, fun, loving.
And that living without children is a viable option because those who don't have children often feel we have to defend that. People who have children aren't asked to defend that choice, for example. So I think your book will help people make the choice that is right for them and not feel, as you say, boxed in to a particular choice.
That's exactly what I'm hoping for.
Our topic today is childless living with my guest, Lisette Schutemacher. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guest is Dutch author Lisette Schutemacher. She writes about a subject not much talked about, childless living. Well, I mentioned that you have your book organized in four seasons. And what topic, how did you bring out your points in your section of the book called Spring?
Yeah, so spring is the time when we are children ourselves, right? And we kind of all travel down the same main road until one of us kind of takes an exit by having a child. And then after some years, it's kind of we're just a few of us on that road still. But it's also about what I call head, heart, and hormones, kind of how to make that decision, because it's not, in many places, it's not a given that you have children. So then you need to think about it. And how can you even think about it? And what is that dilemma like? And I also speak about the parental scale that was a notion brought into awareness 100 years ago already by Dr. Leta Hollingworth, who said, you know, there's people born to be parents, there's people born not to be parents, but many of us are somewhere in between. And you kind of, whilst you're discovering who you are in the spring of our lives, we also need to kind of engage with this topic of how our future is going to unfold. And of course, things like the pill have made this all possible for us.
So your first section is spring, the season of spring, because we are different people in these different seasons of our lives dealing with different decisions. And what stories do you come to mind in this part of our lives, the spring of our lives? You have nieces and nephews.
Oh, I have my beloved nieces and nephews. Yeah. So when they were younger and they came to stay, they came out of an environment where all of their friends, of course, had parents. So they came out of an environment that was mostly family oriented. And then they would come and stay with me in Amsterdam and with my partner, Jos. And they would go like, it's a strange life. It's a nice life. And you're a nice aunt, but not going to be my life. And now they're in their mid-20s and up to their mid-30s. And none of them have children yet. So it's certainly a topic of conversation. And I love to speak with them about this, but I also noticed that I'm really happy they're kind of still on my side of the fence.
Well, yeah. In this section, you quote a woman, a 56-year-old woman in France, who said she had a severe medical condition that prevented her from having children. And when she discovered this at age 26, instead of being distraught, I was relieved. So relieved that I questioned my desire for motherhood at this young age, I realized that I was not interested at all. Plus, my illness was so painful, and I was often in hospital, that the idea of being pregnant seemed like having one more disease. It put me off. So she expressed relief that the question was settled for her. And I've heard people say that they really didn't decide. It was just kind of by accident. Somebody who had two children said neither one of those was planned.
Yeah, I cannot fathom that when you have children that you haven't given that a thought. But I know people my age, well, no, that was just what you did, and I never really thought about it. I always thought about it, so maybe that's why I don't have them. But there's, of course, also people with medical conditions or they can't find a partner or whatever. And then they discover, actually, yes, this is the life I meant to live. So it's still a bit in the dark, this topic of childless living.
Well, it's also easier, according to what I read in your book, if you live in a city. You quote a woman, a 35-year-old teacher who lives in the United States, who lives in a small town. And she says the impact of being 35 and not having kids in small town America is definitely something we need to start talking about as women. Do I think I would feel more accepted in a more urban area? 100% yes.
Yeah.
So living in a small town where you're known and they have these expectations, well, that's the normal path in life that you have children.
Yes, it is. It is. And of course, many of us who don't have children stay in cities. You know, you go and you go to a bigger city to study, and then when you have children, you kind of move to the suburbs or you move to the countryside. So it's, I think in general, there's more of childless and child-free people in cities. And then when you live in a small town, and I mean, you stick out, and that can be uncomfortable. It can also be slightly lonely because the topics of conversation can be very child-centered. And so, yeah, I think in small town, it's more difficult.
My guest is Dutch author Lisette Schutemacher, and her book is Childless Living, The Joys and Challenges of Life Without Children. And you're making the point, really, that this can be a positive choice. It can be a choice that people who have children often have not made that choice. And there's a woman in the Netherlands, you quote, age 36, "I'm happy it's becoming less strange not to have children. People always thought I couldn't have them, although it's a very conscious choice, and people always told me I would regret it. But so far, nope. It's becoming a bit less weird to not follow what society expects, and I'm happy with that. I finally don't have to defend myself for not overpopulating the world." And you notice that she says that it's becoming less strange not to have children. And so this man that I ask about it, who felt that, well, this is a moot issue. We don't need to even talk about it because people accept this. But it's really not talked about. And women are so eager to talk about this subject.
Yeah.
Well, you talked about your own spring, you call it. In this section of spring, you were born 9 years after the Second World War ended, and there were young people, the young people who became your parents. You mentioned that your mother had grown up as a single child in Indonesia, which was a Dutch colony at the time, and so your parents grew up in a different world than what you did.
Oh, they did. Absolutely. Absolutely. The pre-war times when they grew up, we lived in a totally different society. And then after the war, they were very much people who wanted to rebuild society and make sure that, you know, poverty was eradicated. So never again would such a horrible thing happen as the Second World War. Yeah. So then, you know, they met, they fell in love, they started a family, and gave us all they could, and thought we would do the same thing.
So your first section of your book is on spring, and then you move on as people go older to summer, and you call spring promise and potential. Summer is growth and action, where we become who we are. And what interested you about the summer of our lives?
Yeah, so I'm imagining each season to be about 25 years. We will not all live to be 100. So from age 25 to 50, it's really when we start to form our lives and lay the foundation in our work, in our relationship, in where we live, in how we choose to live, for how our life is going to be. Of course, these days we can have several lives in one life, but still. Of course, many people are going to have children. It's like 80 to 85% of the people are going to have children. And then if you're a person who is single or does not want to have children, then kind of roads start to diverge and you have to find new friends who have time on Saturday morning to have a coffee and, you know, stroll around town instead of get the groceries in and ferry the little ones to and fro.
In fact, you say that, you know, if you have children, your day starts with maybe the child wakes you up, and right away you have duties as a parent to that child. And people who don't have children, they can wake up and decide what they want to do. You mentioned the key qualities of this time in your life: self-starting, self-directed, self-sufficient. And so you say people who don't have children lead self-directed lives if they don't have children. And I think often people feel that, well, you're not making a contribution if you don't have children. You're selfish, even. I've heard that word. And yet, if you look at the people who do volunteer work, who are teachers, they make huge contributions, just not in the way people expect sometimes. For example, you are chair of trustees of the Findhorn Foundation in Scotland. Besides being the fact that you have 11, your aunt to 11 children grown. So how did you get involved with the Findhorn Foundation?
Yes, I've stepped down as chair in November, but I was on that board for 17 years. And I went there, and when I first went there 20 years ago, I was like, wow, this is like the outer manifestation of my inner life. I recognized everything and I wanted to immerse myself, but I had just met my partner. And so we had been together for 4 years, and the Findhorn Foundation does not appeal to him. He's an artist. He loves to go to New York and see art and not be in an eco-village where spirituality is the main dish, so to say. So then I thought, okay, I'm not going to leave home, but then maybe I can do things for them. Because, yeah, exactly. I don't have, you know, household to run. So in the evenings, I have extra time and I can do things. So I started to fundraise and do some publicity. And I thought everybody who goes there and who loves it and who thinks this is the way forward will do that. But apparently not so many people do. So then I was asked, only after 3 years, I was asked to become a trustee, which, I was for 17 years, which was a great privilege and honor.
And a friend of mine, for example, who doesn't have children, volunteers at the cancer shop here in Chico, and they have time for volunteer work that the rest of us benefit.
Yeah, there was an article. I was very happy to get sent from a friend an article in The Economist in defense of the childless, where they had all the facts and figures that I can now not reproduce right now. But they said, you know, that the childless should be honored more because they do sit on boards. They leave legacies, not to their specific one, two, or three, or six children, but to foundations and institutions and museums and all the things that everybody profits from, and not just the ones that came from their own flesh and blood. So, yeah, I would really advocate some acknowledgement.
Well, then, what do you have to say about your own summer of your life? I might mention, because you start out by saying, when most of my friends from university had found their life partner, and I might remind people that you do have a master's degree in classics from a university there in the Netherlands where you live.
Yeah, so my summer was really a time of discovery who I could be. There was still a lot of conditioning in me that I was kind of destined, and that it was unavoidable. I was engaged to be married at some point, and then I had a dream that I said no in the church, and everybody kind of gasped behind me, and then I had a dream again, and so I broke up my engagement. I broke my engagement, and I moved to Amsterdam, and I started my own company, and I worked day and night, and it was absolutely wonderful. It was totally, I loved my life. I still love my life, but in the summer too, I loved my life. And it was also, there was times of loneliness, because many of my university friends, I studied Latin and Greek, the classics in Leiden University, and most of my friends kind of hooked up and bought a house and got a mortgage and the job and then had children. And so there were only a few of them who I could still have conversations with that were really interesting to me.
Well, quote from your chapter on your summer.
Yeah,
you
my
say,
summer.
Yeah, much of what you were just saying, you said, to be honest, I was also quite forlorn at first, with my old friends residing in babyland and new friends not yet in place enough to share my innermost feelings with. Having been painfully shy child, I still did not find it particularly easy to connect with people. And, of course, I worked around the clock. But after that first lonely period, I found most of my new friends through work. Freelance colleagues, graphic designers, and single people who'd also moved to Amsterdam became my new companions. And many of us have stayed close to this day. So you, at first, you said you felt forlorn at first when your old friends were involved in a new life. And I talked to somebody here in Chico who said that when his children were young, he lived in a place where all his friends, most of his friends, had children. And he moved to a different state and discovered most of the people there that he came in contact with did not have children. And so he had a chance to see the difference in those two communities.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was, I guess, during this summer that you met an artist who'd been painting with the same color green for over 3 years. And you say you were impressed by his professional persistence.
I was, which he then applied to winning me.
Yes.
And you know what? 24 and a half years later, he's still painting with the same color green. He's a very consistent man.
And then you've said you were afraid of being caged again.
Oh, yes. I was not so good at relationships. But that is also, I think, because I was in relationships assuming that I would be a wife and mother with men who were also assuming I was going to be a wife and mother. So I was always kind of on the wrong foot. And then I met Jos, who is a completely independent person and who had not for a minute in his life wanted a child. And, you know, we had one day where we sat across from one another or where we talked deeply and we said, okay, now that we found one another, we can imagine that people will want children. But we were not going to do it. And we're really happy we did not. So, yeah, I really found my life. But it wasn't immediate.
My guest is Dutch author Lisette Schutemacher. She writes about a subject not much talked about, childless living. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman. I'm Nancy Wiegman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Lisette Schutemacher, author of Childless Living, The Joys and Challenges of Life Without Children. Lisette, in the back of your book, you list some books that inspired you when you're working on this book. And one of the books is by somebody who has done a lot with her life. And the book is My Life on the Road. And it's written by Gloria Steinem, who was a writer, activist, organizer. She co-founded Ms. Magazine. And she has made such a contribution to the 20th and 21st century. She's in her 80s now, and she still travels. And in this memoir that she wrote, she shares memories about her youth and the fact that adults weren't necessarily tied to one spot. And she said that being on the road stood for the freedom she has always allowed herself, and that she, as a radical feminist, would want all women to have in determining their own lives. And I was particularly struck by this because I read Gloria's book. I interviewed her about this book, and I specifically asked her about the dedication in this book. So I have a snippet from Gloria's interview explaining who she dedicated this book to and why.
Well, I dedicated it to a doctor in London who, when I was a student on my way to India, and I was waiting for a visa. And also at the same time, I was working as a waitress. You know, I was there for several months. It was in the dead of winter. And I was realizing that I was pregnant and not knowing what to do. I mean, I had no idea what to do. I had all the fantasies about throwing myself downstairs or riding a horse. I mean, you know, I was...
You were only 22.
I really didn't know what to do. But I found the name of a doctor in the classified pages of the phone book and went to see him. And the second time I went to see him, this was 1957... Shall I read the dedication?
Yes, please.
Okay. This book is dedicated to Dr. John Sharp of London, who in 1957, a decade before physicians in England could legally perform an abortion for any reason other than the health of the woman, took the considerable risk of referring for an abortion a 22-year-old American on her way to India. Knowing only that she had broken an engagement at home to seek an unknown fate, he said, "You must promise me two things. First, you will not tell anyone my name. Second, you will do what you want to do with your life." Dear Dr. Sharp, I believe you, who knew the law was unjust, would not mind if I say this so long after your death. I've done the best I could with my life. This book is for you.
That was activist Gloria Steinem reading the dedication from her book, My Life on the Road. And that's one of the books that you list in the back of your book, Lizette. Lizette is my guest today, who's written a book on childless living, the joys and challenges of life without children. And when I read Gloria's book and realized what she has done with her life, would she have been able to do that if she had not been given a choice?
Well, we don't know, of course, because she is formidable. I mean, what this woman has done. I find the piece that you played very moving. It really moves me because I read it, but I hadn't heard her say it. So Thank you.
Yeah,
you know, there are women. I have one sister. She has four children, a good marriage. She started her own business and has built it to a huge success. She is the main responsible person for my mother. She keeps fit. She has lots of friends. She does it all. I don't think I would have been able to do it. I need more time to myself. I need more time to reflect. I am a multitasker. I've done a lot of things in my life, and I've given myself, you know, lots of experiences that have made me to who I am, but I don't know if I could have done it. And Gloria Steinem is very high up on my list of heroes. So I'm sure she could have found a way, but it would have been difficult, especially because part of her contribution has been to travel to places to speak to women, lots of women who hardly ever have a voice in the news. And it's not so easy when you have a toddler or a 10-year-old who needs to, you know, go to school and have friends. But she would have made it work, I think.
Well, that was the section of your book, The Summer. And then you have the next section, Autumn. And when you talk about your own autumn, you say, "The first time I spoke to friends about experiencing bouts of depression, I was in my early 40s, and they wouldn't believe me. They said, 'We all have our bad days.' But they didn't know about the months of darkness, the weekends when I would lie in bed without moving so I wouldn't hurt so much, the inner crying and despair that went on 24/7, or my fantasies of killing myself by roping stones around my waist and jumping into a canal, with only the technicalities of which rope and stone to use and how to do it without anyone noticing remain unsolved." Now, when I came to that part of your book, Lizette, I was shocked because the rest of your book, I've been reading along and it's upbeat and positive, and I was surprised like your friends were.
Yes, because I was very good at being upbeat and positive, and this day and age, I have really conquered my depressions, or conquered is not maybe the right word, but seen through them and know what to do when kind of dark thoughts arise. But there was a long time when I did suffer from depression. So, you know, later I was like, should I have put this in? But my book is also an honest book. So so I did leave it in there. And yeah, it was not an easy time to be depressed.
Even when you were 15, that's surprising. You said that your parents didn't know anything about it. They didn't know why you were disconsolate. And you would come home, you said, came home from school crying day after day, and your mother would try to cheer you up and distract you. And her geniality, you say, would just make me feel more contempt at the superficial nature of life.
Yeah, and make me feel more lonely. But, you know, the function of having this in the book is that even at 15, I was kind of looking ahead at life as how I was supposed to live it. And it didn't really fit me. So only when I decided to come out of the closet, so to say, as a person who loves being childless, a person who lives her life from spirit, that's when I went to Findhorn. That's when I changed. I sold my company. I changed my life. I changed some of my friends. And then, you know, these depressions weren't necessary anymore. I think it had to do with trying to live up to a construct and a expectations of a life that wasn't mine to live.
Well, I want to get to the fourth season of life. And I was talking to a woman that I know that had two children, but she wasn't consumed by her role as a mother. And so I asked her about this, and she said, in fact, a lot of times people give as a reason for having children that, well, who's going to take care of you in your old age? And this woman who had the two children said, well, the money you save by not having children, you can pay somebody to take care of you in your old age. So this is a subject that you deal with in the section of your book called Winter.
Yes, contemplation and completion. And I've heard that argument. I've heard that argument that we have saved so we can afford to pay people. But because we're also, or not all of us, but many of us are kind of unconventional, autonomous, free spirits, we might not, you know, have done the neat job thing that parents, for a large part, have to do because they have to provide. So, yes, it might be true that we've saved, but it might also be true that we've kind of gone our own way and not saved so much.
Well, this chapter, I think people who might not be interested in the previous seasons of the year would be more interested perhaps in your winter season. You even mentioned the song that you would love to have played at your funeral.
Yes.
And
Leonard Cohen.
Yes.
If it be my will. I love that song. If it be your will, not my will. If it be your will, that I sing no more, that my voice be still as it was before.
Yeah.
I think that is such a beautiful description of what happens when we die.
Well, you tell stories of what can happen at the in the winter of people's lives. And you mention a woman who became a cover girl at the age of 94. She had a documentary made about her life. And she wrote a book that she never expected anything. And people, you quote a lot of people who live into their 90s in this chapter of your book. What did you learn from these people in the winter of their lives?
Well, the woman you're referring to is the extravagant Iris Apfel, who lives in New York and who has racks and racks of clothes and who is a fun person. And I kind of contrast her with the Dalai Lama, who is not in his 90s, but in his 80s, and who, of course, owns nothing. Everything he earns, which is not nothing, but it goes, of course, to the cause and the schools that he supports. But people in their 90s, I have learned from them. One of the things is to be interesting, you have to be interested. And the people I spoke to really made an effort to take an interest in the younger people they know, they came to know throughout their lives, and to also make sure that they are still fun to be with, because there's children kind of even go to cranky fathers and mothers who don't appreciate them or whatever they have tension with. But if you don't have children, you need to be kind of an upbeat, fun person to be with. So people like coming to visit.
You quote a retired dentist in the United States who was 72. He says, "None of my close friends have children, all for different reasons. None of them, to my knowledge, have any regrets. The only concern that I and some of my friends have is fear of old age, if I should lose my partner as well as my mental faculties. I have financial security, but no one that I consider the perfect executor of my will or whom I would trust implicitly to care for me should I become incapacitated. But I'm working on that." She uses the word fear. And how do you deal with that, or how do you recommend that people deal with that, Lizette?
Yeah, so you know, the subtitle, "The Joys and Challenges of Life Without Children," this is really one of the challenges. And of course, there's people with children whose children have moved away or they don't see eye to eye. So children are not a guarantee for your old age. But those of us without children really need to make sure that we have trusted people, or that we can pay trusted people to look after our estate, or to be medically authorized to take decisions over our lives when we can no longer do so. And partially this is up to the individual, but partially this is also up to society. And I have learned that, for instance, in the United Nations and in the AARP and other organizations that concern themselves with the needs of the elderly, that this is a topic, because as more and more of us child-free and childless people come into our old age, you can't completely leave it to the individual. There's also initiatives like villages in cities where people kind of start to look after one another, and there's a cross-section of generations. There's co-housing. There's good examples of, you know, elderly people selling their home and providing money for a younger family to buy a home, and then they kind of, the elderly look after the children and help them with their homework, and they kind of go into a cooperative little society where everybody benefits. So those kinds of solutions will have to be found. But people are in fear. I also know people in their 50s who kind of, you know, who sometimes wake up in the night and go like, how is it going to go when I'm older? So that's really there.
Well, you use the term elder orphans, which is the people you're describing now. And then I hadn't heard that term before, but I thought, yeah. Elder orphans.
Yeah. Solo agers and elder orphans. Yes. People who have lost their spouse or who are single. And, you know, some of us get lonely, but it again, it's not only the childless and the child free who that happens to. But yeah, it's a sweet term, but it does describe also, you know, a world of challenges.
Well, we actually do have a co-housing group here in Chico that was founded some time ago. And when they moved in, they had small children, and now those children have grown up and have their own children. Now, in this section on winter, you, as you have in previous sections, seasons, you describe your winter. And you say, I may change my tune once it is my turn to surrender to the discomforts of old age and imminent death. But I've long surprised friends by saying that I look forward to the moment of passing. Of course, my body will be terrified as it will perish, but the essence of me, I believe, will live on and be reunited with the One. So you make that statement, you surprise your friends by saying that you look forward to that moment of passing.
Yes, I think death is actually the nicer place. You know, I love my life and I have a really good life. But still, this is a sojourn in duality. We have illnesses and threats, and you know, we have peace in my part of the world, but there's lots of places where that is not the case, where there's hunger and hardship. And so I see death as a release, actually, and I look forward to that. Not that I want to die, but I do look forward to that moment.
Well, I think that's a very pleasant, positive note to end on, Lisette. Thank you for writing this book.
Well, thank you for taking so many angles on it. And really, you did your prep work, Nancy. I really appreciate it. Thank you for this conversation.
Well, I have the time to do that because I have no children. Lisette's book is Childless Living, The Joys and Challenges of Life Without Children. And this is Lisette Schutemacher, and I think a lot of people will share that woman's opinion when she says, wow, I want to read that. Thank you so much, Lisette.
Thank you, Nancy.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.